Chapter 3. Quote, "The Holy One of God," end quote. O blessed daughter of Zion, I am with thee, and none shall take my words out of thy lips. Thou art my chosen, to bear my truth to the nations, and I will not suffer another messenger to go before thee. 1901. Joseph Clark had no notion of the burdens Mrs. Eddy was carrying the last few days in April, while he was in Concord, endeavoring to get an interview with her. This well-known reporter from the New York Herald finally managed through Alfred Farlow to gain an audience at Pleasant View on April 30th, and his ensuing article, Miscellany, pages 341 to 346, appeared in the Herald the next day, May 1st. An interesting excerpt from a statement by Mrs. Eddy in a second article by Clark in the New York Herald of May 5th was published by the Committee on General Welfare in 1920. The problem is not so much as to the form of the government as to providing an authority that will ever keep its spirit true to the Christian Science doctrine. A monitor more than a master. I have made rigid bylaws for the government of the church, and every one has been necessary, but they need to be administered in gentleness and forbearance, as well as in firmness with the erring. I have always been motherly to my church, instead of dictatorial, as has been falsely said. Further statements by Mrs. Eddy, which Clark included in his May 5th article, are as follows. Woman has the finer spiritual nature. She more readily takes the impress of Christian Science. If, as you say, I leave all statistics to the publication department, there are 13,000 women against 5,000 men out of a book total of 18,000. It shows that their minds are more receptive, their enthusiasm greater at the beginning of a struggle. But in the strength of man lies the power of carrying it on. I look on man as the designate of the word, but to my view, the idea of race is superior to the idea of sex. Indeed, may we not look forward to a human condition when perfection is nearer, wherein neither male nor female shall be known, and the race may reproduce itself otherwise than now? We are not indifferent to forms of government, but we support the best in each. A church to be universal must in many things be neutral about forms of government and at the same time support what is right to support. When all men are one in the Church of Christ, the perfection of life and the perfection of government under the application of the Golden Rule will come. It will all be simple, natural, without clash or combat, all over the world, in a divine brotherhood. In his first article, Clark quoted Mrs. Eddy as saying, "I have even been spoken of as a Christ. But to my understanding of Christ, that is impossible. If we say that the Son stands for God, then all his rays collectively stand for Christ, and each separate ray for men and women. God the Father is greater than Christ, but Christ is, quote, one with the Father, end quote. And so the mystery is scientifically explained. There can be but one Christ." Though this message was pertinent to Mrs. Woodbury's accusations, it was not the one that caught the world's attention. Surely Mrs. Eddy knew that the world's curiosity would be roused by her statement, quote, "You would ask, perhaps, whether my successor will be a woman or a man. I can answer that. It will be a man," end quote. Herbert Eustace has interpreted her reason for this statement. In making her statement referring to her successor, quote, "the man," end quote, Mrs. Eddy well knew what would be the reaction of the human mind, a torrent of curiosity asking, quote, "Who is it? Where is he?" etc., end quote. That was exactly what she desired to have, a large, wide-awake audience, ready, prepared to hear her answer to that very question. Quote, "Who is the man?" end quote. And she wanted her answer to go home in such a way that it could never again be asked. So, in due time, May 16, 1901, she gave that answer to the largest distributors of news in the world, the Associated Press. Her answer is familiar to every serious student of Christian Science today. And on the 16th of May, in 1901, it was flashed round the world as fast as the media of that day could manage it. All over this planet, people read eagerly, "I did say that a man would be my future successor. By this, I did not mean Mr. Alfred Farlow, nor any other man today on earth." Science and Health makes it plain to all Christian Scientists that the manhood and womanhood of God have already been revealed in a degree through Christ Jesus and Christian Science, His two witnesses. What remains to lead on the centuries and reveal my successor is man in the image and likeness of the Father, Mother, God. Man, the generic term for mankind. Is not Mrs. Eddy saying plainly that she can have no human successor for, quote, "the womanhood of God has already been revealed," end quote. When Christ and Christmas was published, she explained that, quote, "Christian unity," end quote, the one and only circular illustration, was intended to, quote, "foretell the typical appearing of the womanhood, as well as the manhood of God, our divine Father and Mother," end quote. This picture tells us even more. It bespeaks the fulfillment of Jeremiah's prophecy, quote, "The Lord hath created a new thing in the earth, a woman shall compass a man," end quote. Mrs. Eddy knew this full well, else she would never have had the light surrounding the woman's head brighter than that around the head of the man. None but the pure in heart can see God or recognize the Christ. But the, quote, "unclean spirit," end quote, is more aware of its destroyer than are the children of light. In Jesus' time, it used a man to say, quote, "Let us alone. What have we to do with thee, thou Jesus of Nazareth? I know thee who thou art, the Holy One of God," end quote. But in 1901, the serpent that was aware of its destroyer had become the great red dragon, using Mrs. Woodbury in its effort to destroy the womanhood of God. Mary Baker Eddy, quote, "the Holy One of God." End quote. When unclean spirits cried unto Jesus, saying, "Thou art the Son of God," he straitly charged them that they should not make him known. The Christ idea must enter the human heart silently in order to do its leavening work. Even though the Christ idea must be recognized, that was not the time. Nor was May of 1901 the time. God had revealed Mary Baker Eddy's identity as Christ's second coming to Septimus J. Hanna in the spring of 1898, and Judge Hanna had written an editorial about it at that time. When he sent the proof to Mrs. Eddy for her approval, she responded, "The time has not yet come in which to say the wonderful things you have written in proof read by me today, unless you qualify it. Now you may hold your ground as therein, but do not say blandly that I represent the second appearing of Christ. That assertion will array mortal mind against us, and malicious animal magnetism has been putting it into your mind to say it, and the infinite love has inspired you to say it." Her letter a few days later indicated unqualified approval in the words, quote, "Your vision article is too grand, true to be tampered with," end quote. However, only the general part, not the heart, of Hannah's editorial was published in July of 1898. Mrs. Eddy had felt in 98 that, quote, "the time had not yet come in which to say that she represented the second appearing of Christ," end quote. Mortal mind would have been arrayed against her and against Hannah, too. Now, in 1901, with ire aroused, mortal mind would rip them both to shreds, or endeavor so to do, were that assertion made public. It was endeavoring to do just that through Mrs. Woodbury. Judge Hanna was exhausted, and Mrs. Eddy had a daily battle to maintain her sense of human life, as Clara Shannon, Calvin Fry, and Joseph Mann well knew. As much as the world needed to know the complete identity of its Savior, this truth must be hidden a little longer, must be protected for the progress of the cause and for the prosecution of the pending lawsuit. The time had come, however, when her students must learn to distinguish between the human Mary Baker Eddy and the Christ, which she manifested. Science and health was leading the Christian to stop deifying Jesus and teaching the scientist to learn to differentiate between Jesus and the Christ, between the human and the divine. Now they must learn to do the same with their leader. Cyanitic detonations from Pleasant View had shaken her, quote, "men in Boston," end quote, causing William P. McKenzie to write to his fiancée, Daisette Stocking, quote, "One thing we shall have to cease forever, and that is the superstitious worship of a personal leader," end quote. McKenzie had accepted what Miss Stocking had told him, that Mrs. Eddy was the second appearing of Christ, and was greater than Jesus because woman is higher than man. But his acceptance was human belief rather than spiritual understanding. As a result, he had indulged in superstitious worship of personality, as had many others, and this must be abolished. Mr. Kimball was the leader's conciliator. He understood her God-given place, but he did not worship a human personality. This enabled him to accept her decisions, which some thought arbitrary, without murmuring, while at the same time pouring oil on the disturbed waters in Boston. Ira Knapp and Judge Hanna, whose understanding of Mrs. Eddy's identity was unshakable, needed to be most careful to speak discreetly. Mr. Kimball was a great help to all, but no doubt to those two especially. Nonetheless, it was thought wise that the Hannas be sent away from Boston for a very welcome vacation. Mrs. Woodbury's specific charge was that Mrs. Eddy's remarks about the Babylonish woman in her communion address in 1899, Miscellany, page 125, were referring to her, and she was asking $150,000 in damages. Her suit also claimed that Mrs. Eddy claimed to be the woman of the apocalypse, and that science and health was inspired. Christian scientists alone, and not many of them, have an understanding of the woman of the apocalypse. And Mrs. Eddy's astute attorneys, who were fine men, were not Christian scientists. To their understanding, they were working for a dedicated human personality named Mary Baker Eddy. It has been recorded that in answer to their questions, she wrote them stating that, quote, a white-haired old lady could not be the woman of the apocalypse, end quote. Mrs. Eddy's lawyers took the position that the charge made by Mrs. Woodbury concerning the woman of the apocalypse and that science and health was inspired was not germane to the case and brought a demurrer suit for the purpose of eliminating those two items. A demurrer admits that a claim may be true, but is not germane to the point at issue. The judge was convinced and ordered those two items removed from the bill of complaint. The entire action, however, was the deadly attempt of malicious mind to destroy God's chosen witness. Even Attorney Elder saw that, quote, the only mark they are aiming at, end quote, is Mrs. Eddy as the discoverer and founder of Christian Science. The case came to trial in Judge Bell's courtroom in Boston on May 29th. Even though the issue of the woman of the apocalypse had been eliminated from the case, the plaintiff did not drop it. Mrs. Eddy had impressed her disciples with the fact that she did not teach her spiritual identity, and that they must refrain from trying to do so. This revelation must come from God, not man. There is little doubt that Edward Kimball and Ira Knapp discussed this issue, including the fact that the woman of the apocalypse is a divine idea, and also the fact that the public saw Mrs. Eddy as just one mortal among mortals. Consequently, Mr. Knapp was able to answer the questions put to him on the stand at the same level at which they were asked. Peabody. Mr. Knapp, Did you know that it was a part of the belief of the people to whom that message was being read, that the author of the message was herself a person referred to in the book of Revelation? Knapp. I did not. Peabody. Didn't you then know it to be a part of Mrs. Eddy's teaching and the belief of the people assembled in the church of that day that she is what the book of Revelation calls the, quote, woman clothed with the sun, end quote? Knapp. I do not know. Peabody. Did you then know that that was the belief of the other Christian Scientists present? Knapp. No, sir, I did not. It is obvious that Mr. Knapp had to differentiate between the human personality of Mary Baker Eddy and her spiritual identity in his own mind in order to, quote, render unto Caesar the things that are Caesar's, end quote. Despite the enemy's attack on Mrs. Eddy, quote, the earth helped the woman, end quote. After only one day of court proceedings, Mr. Kimball wrote to her in Concord, only one like myself, who is on the inside of the whole history, can understand how thoroughly Peabody was beaten yesterday on the generalship of the case. All of his hopes and threats to the effect that they would expose Christian Science and reveal its unfavorable workings were utterly shattered yesterday, because the court ruled over and over again that all of those outside matters had no relation to the issue in hand at all. Peabody was in a state of almost constant discomfiture. He has none of the sympathy of the jury, and our lawyers have secured it at once. I do not think the case will last more than 10 days. As it turned out, it lasted less than 10 days. One of the scientists Mrs. Eddy called to Boston to work during the proceedings was Mrs. Stetson from New York. 2 days after the trial ended, she wrote home to one of her students, Hotel Touraine, Boston, Massachusetts, June 7th, 1901. My beloved student, I have been so constantly occupied with the work on this trial that I have felt it wise not to write or think outside of it, if possible, and I know that so far as I could, I must leave my students to do their own work. So I have had no care for them. The victory has come at last. We have demonstrated the powerlessness of hypnotism, witchcraft, and mental diabolism to overthrow the cause of Christian Science and the work of our beloved leader, Mrs. Eddy. We have realized enough of truth and love to nullify the seeming power of the foe. Now we can say understandingly, quote, the accuser of our brethren is cast down unto the earth, end quote. What has the enemy not tried to do all these years to injure our leader and me? In a letter written by Mrs. Eddy to me are these words, quote, the lies that are told about me or what I say of you are not worth your notice nor mine, end quote. I thank God that I have been able to stand until error uncovered and destroyed itself. The error was made so unreal that instead of 3 weeks, which the judge gave for the trial, it was over in 4 days. The enemy was conquered as soon as we rose in a body to spiritual understanding and realized the allness of God and the nothingness of evil. After 4 days of testimony for the plaintiff, Peabody rested his case. Mrs. Eddy's attorneys made a motion for a directed verdict without presenting any of the extensive evidence they had accumulated. But on the declaration that Peabody had not proved his case, the judge concurred and instructed the jury to bring in a verdict in favor of Mrs. Eddy, which was done on Wednesday, June 5th. The whole point of the trial had been to subject the woman, God crowned, to the ridicule of the world, and the press was not averse to such scandalous publicity. On June 8th, the Boston Journal reported, "It was for the purpose of making clear the attitude of Reverend Mary Baker Eddy regarding certain points that came out in the testimony submitted by plaintiff, that a Boston Journal reporter asked Mrs. Eddy for a statement." Mrs. Eddy referred the matter to Edward A. Kimball, and now it was essential that Mr. Kimball be just as cautious and discreet with his answers as he had encouraged Ira Knapp and others to be on the witness stand. If he was not, they would still lose the case for God's chosen witness, even though the verdict had already been rendered in Mrs. Eddy's favor. It might be well for us to ask ourselves if we could have done as well in Mr. Kimball's place. Mr. Kimball said, quote, "Mrs. Eddy does not wish to make any statement relative to this subject. She has solemnly declared from the first that she did not refer to the plaintiff when writing about the Babylonish woman, and the only dignified and consistent course open to her is to rest peacefully on that declaration and let others contend if they will." What about the statement that Christian Scientists regard her as being infallible? Mrs. Eddy does not believe or teach or want anyone else to believe or teach that she is infallible. She and we believe in the infallibility of God only. Does she think that she is the woman clothed with the sun spoken of in Revelation? She does not. She does not teach or want anyone to teach that. Why did not the witnesses explain what your belief is about Mrs. Eddy? Because there is no formulated belief on the subject. To whom did your people think the message referred? I do not know. I can only say that I have never yet talked with anyone who said he thought it meant a person. End quote. Though this trial was lost by Josephine Woodbury, the venomous serpent still used this poor woman in his continued attempt to destroy God's chosen witness. Mrs. Eddy knew that the effective mental work, and especially her message of 1901, had won a battle. But the war was raging on. She wrote to Mr. Tomlinson in mid-June regarding the mental work that had been done. "This has been the lever of truth that has shone on the press and the field, and my message turned the tide to a flow. What I mean is that nobody sees the moves of the enemy or knows when he feels them unless I talk, talk, talk. and this is a mental period, and mental malpractice holds the signs of the times that the students must discern, or our cause will be held back centuries by it. In this direction, I am alone, and few notice what I say or believe it. Reverend Tomlinson was soon to experience the, quote, moves of the enemy, end quote. Peabody spent the next quarter of a century endeavoring to destroy Mrs. Eddy. And even though Mrs. Woodbury remained more or less in the background, for several years she directed malicious, wicked malpractice for the same purpose. As Mrs. Eddy had said in her message, 01, page 19, quote, "The whole world needs to know that the milder forms of animal magnetism and hypnotism are yielding to its aggressive features," end quote. Mrs. Eddy, on the other hand, went right on fulfilling her own description of her life and work, written after Judge Clarkson had deserted her, quote, "Behold a woman, the almond blossom upon her head, busy hands and pen, never leaving the post of duty, but week after week, month after month, and year after year, toiling, watching, praying, and sending forth messages of God's dear love over all the earth," end quote. And now she had plans for another major project to be sent, quote, "over all the earth," end quote.